From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made when you find something on the ground that isn't yours. What should you do with it? What happens if you find an object belonging to your neighbor? Should you return it? What if the object has religious implications? What is the moral thing to do? What is the legal thing to do? It's safe to say that most of us are not scholars in religious texts, traditions, and laws. And so a group of game creators is trying to help while giving us a game series that looks a bit, to me, like Settlers of Catan, maybe a bit like Magic the Gathering, and a lot of something entirely new. The game series is called Lost and Found, and there are three games in the series. Unlike, say, Monopoly, or unlike most popular games, you're not simply out to dominate your opponents. In fact, in the Lost and Found series, if any one player goes destitute, everybody loses. There are ways for individuals to win. There are ways for all players to win. At the center of the game is the designer's hope, fun. I mean, can't have a game without it being fun. But also key is historical accuracy. The designers have consulted with scholars and experts to create games that are challenging and take into account actual religious teachings and laws. Here's how the designers describe the first in the Lost and Found series. Quote, Lost and Found is a historical strategy card game of community, family, and lost and found objects. Build your community, take care of your family, avert disasters, and don't let any of your neighbors go destitute. In medieval North Africa, towns are built by families like yours. Show your strategic and collaborative skills. End quote. The games arrive at an interesting time, with fewer Americans identifying themselves as strongly religious. But there are some hopeful data points. Take a look at this. In 2017, following a highly contentious national election, of course, in which Donald Trump's victory was powered in part by evangelical Christians, Pew wanted to find out if Americans' views of religions outside of their own were getting warmer or cooler. It turned out that every single religious group, and separately, atheists as well, received warmer views than the previous decade. Well, all but one. Only evangelical Christians were not more warmly viewed by their peers. But that doesn't mean that we have generally favorable views of most or all religions. Americans tend to have neutral or negative views toward atheists and Muslims in particular. Games like Lost and Found seek to entertain while giving us a kind of historical education into the roots of religious tradition or laws. And can it work? Well, let's talk to our guest this hour and really, one of the people behind the games is Owen Gottlieb. Dr. Gottlieb is an associate professor in the School of Interactive Games and Media at the Rochester Institute of Technology, the founder and director of RIT's Interaction, Media, and Learning Lab, founder and director of the Initiative in Religion, Culture, and Policy at the RIT Magic Center. Owen, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
It is great to be back.
And great to have Dr. Muhammad Shafiq with us. Muhammad is a professor of religious studies at Nazareth College and a Muslim clergy member. Dr. Shafiq, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you very much, and I'm sorry I'm not there personally.
That's no problem at all. It's great to have both of you. And Dr. Gottlieb, I did my best to kind of summarize here. I mean, you can't make a game that isn't entertaining if you want it to actually, end up on people's dining room tables. But this game, to me, looks a lot like Settlers of Catan, a little Magic the Gathering, a little kind of some different flavors. I know it's its own thing here, but I'm looking for analogs that people would gravitate toward. What would you compare it to?
Yeah, you're definitely in that space. You know, we talk about certainly the strategy games being in kind of the Euro game or a mid-weight Euro. So those are the games that kind of became popular with Settlers of Catan. And certainly I am heavily influenced by Magic the Gathering, which I think many years ago, before these games were out, we spoke as it approached Hanukkah. And when I was an undergraduate, my friends were playtesters for Magic the Gathering. So my history with Magic the Gathering goes way back. And yes, we want to really deeply engage people. That's a core part of games and learning and the work that we do as scholars and designers in creating games for learning. How do you get deep engagement? And as a key part of then building in the modeled systems that lead to learning.
Well, and so, Owen, it starts with an entertaining game, but that's not the only point. What is the overall mission here? If you are successful with this series, Lost and Found will have done what?
So there's a few things that we've aimed for over the years. And one is to really try to change the discourse around religious legal systems. So we may often hear in the news people throwing around ideas about, you know, negative aspects of religious legal systems. You know, there's so much Islamophobia around notions of Sharia law. But if you actually look at the history, and we're looking at Fustat in northern Africa in the 12th century, we have a really beautiful period of a crossroads of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And we're using these games to explore the religious legal systems that lead to sustainable governance practices and the ability for communities to collaborate and cooperate with one another. So when the game is successful, it's fun, it's engaging, and it's also shedding light on a time when it was far more clear that how we can get along and how there are pro-social aspects of religious legal systems that all too seldom, you know, get talked about, unless you're taking a graduate level course in religious legal systems.
So before I get over to Dr. Shafiq, listeners know we're going to dig into the history of religious tradition and legal systems. We're going to talk about stereotypes versus reality. But they may just wonder if these games are on the shelf. Where do you find these three games, Dr. Gottlieb?
Our games are, and you feel free to call me Owen, and I'm also an ordained rabbi, and it's really lovely to be here with Dr. Shafiq, with Muhammad. The games are available at lostandfoundthegame.com, and there's a print-on-demand service that we use that allows us to produce the game, and it means we don't have to have warehouse space to hold them, so people can get the games there. And then there's also usually copies of the games available on the RIT campus at the store that's on campus that sells games as well. We've occasionally had games at the Strong Museum as well, but the fastest way to get them is lostandfoundthegame.com.
Dr. Shafiq, what do you make of these games and the effort to not only entertain, but to maybe change views and kind of cut back on stereotypes?
You know, this is very significant for me as interfaith leader. A few years back Dr. Owen approached me, I really like the idea for different reasons. One is, you know, I'm committed to interfaith, which means connecting people, creating a peaceful atmosphere. So for that reason, when he said that this would be something of a medieval period between shared heritage, Muslims and Jewish, which I know what Maimonides did, you know, in the medieval period, and how the Maimonides and Muslim scholars lived together and exchanged ideas. And so all of that, when you said this period in North Africa, especially in the Egyptian area where this whole discussion, the medieval laws were developed and how things happened, actually started in Spain, as you know, but anyway, how education moves from one place to another. So we work together for this reason that especially there was no interfaith dialogue, if you see, in the 90s between Jewish and Muslim communities. And we created that in Rochester. So we were pioneers, actually, to create later on a commission on Jewish-Muslim relations. And now you see it throughout the U.S. that there are different interfaith groups working together, and also special Jewish-Muslim dialogue is happening. So having that this is a good thing. Entertainment is part of life. People play game. And this is a game where they can do entertainment. At the same time, they can learn the shared heritage of Jewish and Muslim laws. So it was very significant and the lost and found. So my job was to dig into the Muslim law of the medieval period about lost and found. So I worked on that. And this is, you know, Professor Owen is an amazing person, how he really put this together and created a game where all family members can sit together and learn about Jewish-Muslim laws in the medieval period. And at the same time, their kids could join them. They can, you know, this is a good experience for a family to spend time together and at the same time to be educated. How the two communities share together, they're living in Spain, they're living in different other places. as one, as two communities living like one community and peaceful atmosphere. So how they can learn. And then now they can think about 21st century. What are some obstacles in our way and how we can be again together? So also there is a lot about anti-Semitism today and Islamophobia. And both communities shall see that their responsibility again, what they have to do about Islamophobia and anti-Semitism. So there are pretty much common, I mean, this game is not just a game. It is something how to renew our Muslim-Jewish relationship on sound grounds.
Yeah, Owen, there's a lot there. And one of the, I think one of the really key questions for game designers is what's going to actually capture the imagination and the attention and convince people to sit down to learn the rules and to actually play it. And I think on this program a few years back, we talked about the anniversary of the creation of the Monopoly game. A lot of people don't know. I didn't know until reading about it that almost as long as there's been a Monopoly game, there's been a game called Anti-Monopoly. And it is a board game that was created by a San Francisco State University professor, literally in response to Monopoly. And the goal of that game, Anti-Monopoly, is to bust up the three company combinations on the game board to not allow anyone to dominate. And so it's basically the opposite effect. But the creator of Anti-Monopoly thought, well, look, everybody enjoys playing Monopoly, but it's kind of teaching you to dominate everybody else, to put them out of business, to put them in the poorhouse, as Monopoly used to say. And let's create a game where you can have fun, but you know it's sort of community-focused, which is a nice idea. But today, I don't know anybody who plays Anti-Monopoly, and a lot of houses still have Monopoly in it. So in your game, if any one person goes destitute, all the players lose. And there is a much more community-minded focus of the games that you have created. And I wonder if you think that that can have the kind of appeal, the same kind of appeal that these popular games have had.
Lots in that question. You know, I was thinking back to the origins of Monopoly, and before Monopoly was Monopoly, it was actually more like Anti-Monopoly. So the original creator of Monopoly had different ideas than what becomes what we know as Monopoly. And so I think part of the question you're asking is how are things promoted and how are things marketed? And so I think part of what we do on the Lost and Found team is we do spend a lot of time going out to festivals. We were just at the Boston Festival of Independent Games. I was out at International Meaningful Play in Michigan. So part of it is getting the word out, being on great shows like yours about spreading the word. Also, games, tabletop games have evolved a great deal. If we go back to the 90s, and you mentioned Settlers of Catan, so there are all these games, both American-based and Europe-based games, that use game mechanics like collaboration and cooperation. So, for example, there's a game, and it came about before COVID-19, well before it, called Pandemic, in which you are all working to fight the outbreak of a virus, and everyone has a specific role, and you work together as a team against the game system. And we see this in video games as well. So I think as games evolve, we're seeing more of this collaborative, cooperative play. And then what I worked very hard on with the graduate students, the undergraduate students, and the faculty, and especially Ian Schreiber, who did core mechanics design on the Lost and Found series, was on the strategy game, how do we combine these new kind of cooperative, collaborative game mechanics, you all have to work together, with the tensions that we see in community. And so the way that we balance that is sometimes you have incentives that are driving you and your family, but you also have incentives about taking care of your community. And so a lot of what was really tough in the design of the games, especially early on, was figuring out how to get that balance in order to get that engagement and get that fun. And nowadays we're seeing more games that are doing that, but we were really one of the first game systems to do both collaborative and cooperative play at the same time. And I think the excitement around the game mechanics and the system and having a game with good balance that everyone does feel like they have a chance to play and win, and that it's not obvious that you're necessarily going to win because you do the right thing. And so the other thing we built into the games is that you can play in a transgressive way. You can be negative towards the community and there's still a chance you'll win, but there are ramifications. So really we try to build that into the model of the system. So I'm both inspired by the games that have come out in the last 20, 30 years, and also by the team members that I work with that really try to, you know, create these engaging games together.
In our second half hour, I'm going to ask Owen to really kind of dig into the game. I want to know who did the artwork on the cards. It's beautiful. It's really, really well done.
Students. It's all students at RIT.
Oh, see, don't give it all away. But that's it's a great looking package. It is beautiful. I was, to your point, Owen, that there are collaborative games. There are video games where people have more fun beating the game than beating each other. Those are very good points. And I was the kind of kid growing up, I would play the Sid Meier series of games. And when I played Civilization, I always wanted to colonize the stars as opposed to winning the game by destroying and conquering all of my opponents. So that was just my sort of disposition, different ways of playing games. And so, yeah, I'm sure there is a market out there. But what I wanted to ask both of you was if the market for this series of games that you've created, the Lost and Found series of games, does it have a chance of, converting is the wrong word, changing the minds of people with, you know, who have real, I think, stereotypical and even potentially bigoted or problematic ways of thinking about religion. And I am not talking about, we're in a world where Nick Fuentes is dining with Donald Trump and Kanye, with Kanye, and, you know, some really, really of the high profile anti-Semites have a lot of traction with some very, very powerful people. I don't think they're going to pick up these games, but I do wonder if, if the market does include people who might be sort of needing to broaden their minds a bit. And can you get this in front of them? And can they sit down with it, Owen?
So a couple of ideas about that. One is when we took the first two games in the series, the first being the Lost and Found strategy game, and the second one is a party game that's played around a table. You don't have to read a large instruction book for the party game, and you tell stories about how a law related to Lost and Found might have gotten into court in the first place, and it's played for humor. And so when we took that, we were invited to the Smithsonian Arcade in 2018, and I think there were between 1,000 and 3,000 families and people that came out to play that day. And we've got really good photographs of people laughing about the game. So, you know, that's an example of taking the game out into the public and having positive interactions with people. Now, as to that being the target audience that you're talking about actively changing minds, I think someone has to be open to going to a place like a museum or trying a different kind of game. That said, you know, there's plenty of prejudice throughout, you know, game communities as well. And one of the hopes that I had for the game system was that if you play this game, oh, by the way, there are things you're going to learn along the lines of playing it. And I really wanted to be like, you couldn't play this game and then have someone say to you, well, Sharia law this, Sharia law that, and just make blanket statements. You say, I played a game and there's, you know, Islamic law from 12th century, and it's about how you get along with your neighbor. So, you know, there's the historic truth underlying the game that's there. So rather than kind of using this game in the hopes of maybe, you know, deprogramming people who are, you know, so deeply into racism and hatred, I think this is about changing the way the broader community thinks about religious legal systems. And that, you know, I know that evolutionary anthropologists also tell us that religion has great pro-social aspects to it. And we don't talk about those aspects as much. So I wanted to raise that as part of the discourse and get people talking about it. And so far we've got a lot more people talking about it.
Dr. Shafiq, you want to add to that?
Yeah, thank you. Well, Owen explained it very well, but for me, it is very significant. Change of mind doesn't happen one day. Even about religion, there is a lot of misunderstanding. I see in the colleges, students would not take a religious course, a religion course, unless it becomes sort of part of their curriculum, is essential for them. So that happened from the 17th century. But now you see there is a change of mind happening about where there is a anti-way also, but there is a pro-religious thinking happening also. How really religion can make a difference in human life, human personal life, human communal life. So I think there are people, and also, you know, the extreme lines are there too. So how we can do that? I think you need to show the people that you can have a humor. You can spend your time in a way that is very fruitful, and you get some knowledge. And slowly and gradually, I think you will see how the change of mind happens, and hostility which is there about religion, as well as hostility towards the Jewish community and Muslim community, which you see in Europe and America, that common heritage when they see, when they sit together, that will eventually lead. That was a good, which is called the golden period in Spain, in the medieval era, Jewish-Muslim-Christian living together and respecting one another. Why we should not do that? Why we go to extremism? So I think all this thing happened because of people lack of knowledge. This game, when they play, when there is, the way they play in a cooperative way, and collaborating in a cooperative way, finally this will bring a sense of community to them. I think this is Owen's purpose, and that's what I took and spent my time with him. I mean, the creation of the game is his one, but from the Muslim side, to give him the essential tools of the law that he put it there. So I think this is very, very significant in that way. And I think slowly and gradually it will get that place where some other games are having.
Talking to Mohammed Shafiq and Owen Gottlieb about this new series of games, and in the long history now of, well, I don't know how long, pretty long number of years history in this community of interfaith tradition, this goes right to right on that list. You have Owen, who is ordained as rabbi, who is a professor at RIT and someone who's working in game creation, working with Dr. Shafiq, who's doing research, historical research into Muslim law and tradition, and making sure that these games present not only a fun challenge, but also historical accuracy and a way to educate people about the real roots of religious tradition, teachings, and laws. And before I take our only break of the hour, and then we're going to talk about sort of how the game works, because the geeky side of me, I love game creation. I used to take poster boards, and my twin brother and I used to create entire boards of like a new Sid Meier Civilization type game. And I'm sure we were the only two people who ever played it, but we had fun with it. And, I think it's fascinating how games come together. We'll talk about that in our second half hour. Owen, just briefly, what did you make of Kanye and Fuentes meeting with Trump? And what is the significance of that story at this moment when we know anti-Semitism has been on the rise?
What did I make of it? I have not been pleased with the way that Kanye has been talking. I'm sad because I know that he also suffers from mental illness. But I think it's quite dangerous when popular figures repeat conspiracy theories that are dangerous, that are debunked, that are disproven. And it's a shame because people who are in the popular eye and have many followers on social media have a great deal of power. And I also think, I think a lot about one of the heroes, that the post-war Jews who created the Marvel superheroes and the DC superheroes, and Stan Lee would talk about, with great power comes great responsibility. They can't just be written off as popular figures, because with that power also comes responsibility, and it's a problem.
Kanye is sort of his own, I think, strange, sad case, but overtly anti-Semitic. And I understand the point you're making that, he's been had his own troubles, but I also understand the point of real accountability for anti-Semitism. Kyrie Irving has been in that category as well. Nick Fuentes is an entirely different person. Nick Fuentes is just a white supremacist, proud sexist, anti-Semite, that to get a seat at a table with a former president, a person who wants to be the next president, I can't feign surprise anymore. I get it. But to me, Owen, it's a real problem. I'll ask both of you about this. It's a real problem that it doesn't surprise me anymore that this is happening, because it is disgusting to see that to me. And I don't know what to do about it.
All right. You know, I have a, just to give you my own 5 cents on this issue. You know, this issue of good and bad, positive and negative, has been as a part of human life. So always we will have this. Some people want to be popular through one way or another way. My approach is positive and negative are both essential to people who want peace, peaceful coexistence. Actually, they need to work harder when they see these things, that the how we can be able to work and bring the positiveness towards people so they don't go along with the negativeness. So I think this gives, to personally to me, it gives me more strength to work, gives me more strength to bring the positive light to the people that is not good for us if we want to live together in this 21st century, living together like in one village or in a boat or in a ship. We shall not destroy that. So I think in reference to this game, I see it in that line also. And these things will happen. You know, it happened before in the four years of President Trump, how anti-Semitism became stronger. Islamophobia went into very high level. Other things happened to minorities. So I think that's, and you see the new wave of standing together against all negativeness. So I think this is part of life. People like that will be always there who play negatively. But I think the media, social media, print and electronic media, and intellectuals, professors, others, our colleges, universities should concentrate on education, which is positive, which is civic and respectful. So that's my stand, and that's what I do. I think you know me well, how I stand for these things.
What do you think, Owen?
Well, it's inspiring to hear my colleague and friend talk about bringing light. And, you know, we're approaching Hanukkah, and so I am often thinking about how we bring light to the darkness. We light candles to light up the darkest nights of the winter. And how do we bring hope? I'm not surprised by what has been happening and with our former president. And so really trying to concentrate on bringing hope because the surprise has left me, and therefore, where do we place our energy? So it was lovely and inspiring to hear Muhammad talk in that regard. And so I am certainly in agreement with that.
Well, let's take our only break of the hour. And when we come back with Drs. Gottlieb and Shafiq, they are PhDs who have earned not only their many titles, but Owen is an ordained rabbi, and Muhammad, of course, directed the Islamic Center of Rochester and is a Muslim clergy member, and they have worked together creating this series of games. It's the Lost and Found series. The second of three is a party game. It's a little lighter, but the games that, to me, to my eye, they look they've got some echoes of some of the classics that are out there, whether it's Settlers of Catan or Magic the Gathering, and with the way some of the cards are written and the artwork and the work. And we're going to talk about how these games come together. Their mission is to entertain you, but also to give you a more grounded and realistic understanding of the history of religious law and tradition. And that's not an easy task in a world with a lot of things competing for your attention. So we'll talk about the Lost and Found series, how the games came together, and how they work on the other side of this, our only break. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, the team at Person-Centered Housing Options is sounding the alarm about the rise in homelessness in Rochester. We'll talk to them about a new permanent housing project and their outreach to local people in need of homes, especially as we hit the colder months. Then in our second hour, a World Cup match on Tuesday between the U.S. and Iran has fans talking and a lot of geopolitics at play. We'll talk about it. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So, Owen Gottlieb, who comes to us from RIT with a team that has created this series of games. There are so many games in the marketplace, and when you created the Lost and Found series, you wanted to create something that was fun, that would grab people's interest, and I want you to take us through. You can choose any of the three, and if you, give us a little primer on how it works and how the game is played.
Sure. So there are a number of games that inspired the series as well, which I'm happy to talk about. So first I'll talk about the strategy game. So we most recently released New Harvest, and New Harvest is the Islamic law module, and that goes with the original Lost and Found game. And these are strategic games in which players are confronted with Lost and Found objects that are in their locale, and it's set in Fustat Old Cairo in the 12th century. And so you have to both work towards meeting your family's needs. What are the things that your family needs, and what are the things that your community needs? And you have to balance those needs. So really, they're trade-off decision-making games in the face of the law. And you can either follow the law, you can transgress or break the law, and you can go above and beyond the law. And we kind of look at how the systems work, and we try to model an actual system so that the game brings to life legal codes. So if we were to just look at a legal code as a set of laws, it may not seem so engaging. And so the idea is to kind of use the game to create case study to actual cases of the law playing out. So if my neighbor's cow goes missing and I find it, what's my responsibility? Well, the law says that I have a certain responsibility to care for it and to make sure it gets back to its owner. And so we start to see how reciprocity in society works. If I'm not going to care for my neighbor's objects, can I expect them to care for mine? Some of the mechanics that go into this system are we have event cards, and those are drawn from legal codes. In the first game, Jewish legal codes. In the second game, both Islamic law codes. And you can play the two together, so you can have neighbors, Jewish and Muslim, side by side. And so you then say, okay, here's the law, here's the quandary that I'm in, what do I do? And you make those decisions. And sometimes there are disasters that happen, maybe there's a flood, turns out there are monsoons in North Africa, or there's a fire, or there's a plague, and you have to work together with the people around the table to solve those problems together. You do, as you had mentioned earlier, need to prevent anyone from going destitute. And so there's a certain level of cooperation that has to go on. But there's also incentive, once you've met the basic community responsibilities, for you to win the game. And so there's a competitive and cooperative aspect that goes back and forth. So that's kind of the core mechanics of this strategic game system. And we took inspiration from games like Agricola, a very popular complex game that is set in an agrarian setting. And so we said, oh, we can do all these great material culture details and look at the architecture, the beautiful architecture of Fustat in the 12th century. And all of our card backs have those architectural patterns. And so each piece that we put on cards, we really worked on the details there. So that's a little bit about the strategy games. I can talk about other games like Cosmic Encounter and how to make alliances and to work together at certain points, but not with others. Seven Wonders, for people who play Seven Wonders, you know, if you get one aspect of your community built up, that will make it easier for you to build another aspect of your community. So there's like chaining bonuses like in Seven Wonders. So I'm also happy to talk about the party game as well, which has totally different mechanics. So Evan, tell me, where would you like me to head?
So that helps, but just make sure we understand, how do you win the New Harvest game?
Oh, okay. So in this game, you have to first, you must build up your community and get six community responsibilities fulfilled. So build a mosque, or if you're playing with the Jewish version, maybe you have to build a synagogue. You have to have clean water. It turns out, right, Maimonides, the great rabbi, physician, scholar, wrote in his code that you had to have clean water. When I first read that, I thought, oh, it's because he's a physician. He knows you have to have clean water. Well, Maimonides is clearly very much influenced by great Islamic jurisprudence. And in Islamic law, you've got to have clean water, right? So we start to see all these connections. So you have to have clean water. You have to build up your community. Once you fulfill those responsibilities, you also have family responsibilities to fulfill. And so if you can get six of the communal responsibilities and three of the family responsibilities, and you don't get caught doing something you weren't supposed to do, or maybe a neighbor helps you out more because you would help them out more. Like, these are kind of the random moments of, are you caught? Are you rewarded? Then you're eligible to win the game. So one, two, three, four, five, or six, any or all players can win, but nobody can go destitute or everyone loses.
Okay. So Dr. Shafiq, Do you think, I mean, I don't know how much of a game player you are, but what have you learned here about this process? What have you sort of enjoyed about being a part of all of this?
Play much of these games before, because I spent my time on writing and reading, I did not involve myself till Owen came to me and said, let's do this, you know, and also he brought the game for me. Once he made it ready, he brought it for me to play it a little bit. It's a fascinating idea, you know. It's a little difficult idea, but it's a really fascinating idea. Once you understand it, once you know it, the family enjoys it, the community enjoys it, and especially, you know, the idea that how there could be a synagogue. You know, if you see the Muslim civilization in the medieval period, whether you go to Spain, whether you go to Baghdad, or you go to Bosnia, the synagogue, the church, and the mosque were in one place, very close, connected. So that's where the communities were built in those days. And that's where the idea is giving, that we can have a mosque here, we can have a synagogue here, we can have a church here, we can have communities, but we need to come together and help one another. You know, raising our own family, yes, is primarily responsibility, working for the community, and then communities coming a lot for common purpose, how to do things. So I think this game, I got interested in this game because the way it works, and it's very much interfaith related, actually, and the peace building efforts, which I'm trying to do, is actually this is the way we can grow, that we accept one another, we accept the presence of each and every community, their places of worship, and we built it together. If one place, I think you see recently some of the things that Muslims started to build synagogues or help them when they were destroyed or they were attacked, they raised money for that. The same thing you see from the Jewish community. Not only 9/11, before 9/11 we did that together. After 9/11 you see that quite increasing between Jewish, Muslim, and Christian communities. Things are happening the way I think this game will teach it how to make it better and how to help to strengthen our communities in working relations.
Owen, how long does the average game take to play?
So the strategy games, as you probably know, having played Catan, as you said yourself, those can take between 60 and 90 minutes for a full game. When I'm using them in class, in history classes, I recently published an article on 3 years of use of the Lost and Found games in a history classroom with a scholar teacher, Sean Kleiber. And there we would take sections of a game and use a section of the game in the class. With the party game, that can be played in 15 minutes. So we created the party game in part because we had a different question we wanted to help teach people about, which was legal reasoning. What's the reason, the legal reasoning? And we thought, okay, the trade-off, collaborative, cooperative decision-making isn't getting us to the legal reasoning. And we also wanted a lighter weight game as well. And so out of that came the party game. And the party game is pretty quickly deployable in a fun setting. And you could play a quick round of that. So you can either go in depth with the strategy games, or in classrooms, use a part of the strategy games. And we always wrap into curriculum in a history classroom or an art history classroom. Or you can use the legal reasoning game for a quick spin at the game system.
Talking about a series of games called Lost and Found, and they are available now. Again, Owen, where can people find them?
Shop One at RIT carries the game. Lost and Found, thegame.com. You can get them directly. Those are the two best places to get the game.
The artwork is beautiful. You mentioned it. You turn to your students for that. And, you know, you're describing, you and Dr. Shafiq are describing the games, but I think until you actually see the cards, that's the cards for me are what evoked Magic the Gathering and some of the way that the players have options on what, how to handle, whether it's a broken object, a found object, pomegranate seeds found on the ground, things like that. That's what evoked kind of Settlers of Catan for me. But you had to create this world, Owen, and how did you do it? Take me through the process of actually turning it into a tangible reality.
So it's a long process, and about 10 years the system has been in development. We released the first two games, 2017, and just recently released New Harvest. It's a long period, and it's a lot of collaboration between faculty at RIT, faculty like Dr. Shafiq at Nazareth, Philip Ackerman Lieberman at Vanderbilt, a great scholar of Jewish and Islamic law of this period, worked with us and worked with the students. And so we could say, okay, we want to have a beautiful card of this object because we want the game to aesthetically be beautiful. We want to accurately represent the time period. So students would do sketches based on images that we were referred to, and then we would consult with Dr. Ackerman Lieberman, and we would go back and forth. And so it's, as all good game design, an iterative process over time. And so, you know, years of working on illustrations, and certain students would graduate, and new students would come in, and they'd learn from the seniors ahead of them and kind of pick up the ball and keep working on it. But it's really a collaborative effort, learning along the way. Okay, what are the patterns in the architecture infostat at this period? And what might this, what might a coin look like? And I often talk about the game series as kind of part of like Maimonides' dream when I refer to the Jewish section, because if you have a coin, you have a dinar. Well, is he referring to a dinar from the Talmudic period? Is he referring to a dinar from the Mishnaic period? And so on our, you know, oldest detail to material culture, we actually place coins from different periods on the card and mark them as such. So you start to get a sense of the kind of stacked level of history that's in these illustrations. And so it's not just passive learning through the process of putting the accuracy into the illustrations of the period, but it's also the learning that goes into making the game as well, because we have to study these texts. There were many nights that graduate, undergraduate students and I were late night into the design studio and Ian Schreiber going, okay, how do we develop a system in which there's these dual, you know, incentives, and how do we get the accuracy there? So yeah, definitely many, many years of work for a lot of great students and faculty together.
Yeah, go ahead, Dr. Shafiq. Yep.
Yeah, I have quite a few. We have quite a few grandchildren, and they play games, and the whole family, I mean, different games, the family is not pleased with those games. You know, somehow we keep eyes on them, watching them. So we were talking together during the Thanksgiving about this game, and we were talking, let's sit together. First we learn it, and then bring the kids into it. Instead of those games they play, let's all sit together and play this game together. And this way they can learn, and this way they can be together, not to avoid them, not to do something which is not fruitful for them, which is not good for them, games like that. And as a family, they can build relations with us because we are all sitting together and playing together. So I thought this is a very good idea to make the family stronger. And they have Jewish friends because they go to school where there is plenty of Jewish students. So they have friends. Like sometimes they will bring it to our home, and sometimes they would say, let's go there to their home. So that's a relationship that first between our family, and then ask them, okay, let's invite one other family from the Jewish side, and we all play together, their kids, you and us as two families. So I think this is something very significant from my side. It needs a little learning, and it is beautiful. It is spiritually awakening and taking you to the history and making you to think about 21st century.
Let me get a couple of bits of feedback from listeners. First on the phone, Shaheen is with us. Hi, Shaheen. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. First of all, let me tell you how much I enjoy this program. It's wonderful. It's amazing, and I'm definitely going to purchase some of these games to teach in teaching my friends and my grandson about this kind of issue. Secondly, I wonder if there is ever any way of perhaps making a game that protects religion from being abused by politicians, and the other way too, to protect government from the influence of extreme religious ideas. Thank you. I would leave and let you respond.
Okay, Shaheen, thank you. Owen and Muhammad?
Go ahead.
I was thinking of Diane Moore's work. Diane Moore at Harvard Divinity School is one of the scholars who worked on the game series with us, and also Christian clergy. And Diane's work is about religious education and teaching. And so at the core of this, I think learning about each other's religions is core, and that there's this notion of it's not Judaism, but Judaisms, right? Or the ways in which religion is practiced in specific areas and specific groups, it's different. And if there's a notion that there's one way of being in that religious community, I think that is a danger marker in terms of heading towards extremism. And so that's part of why the game is set in Fustat in the 12th century at this moment of crossroads of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, as a way of saying this is, you may not have heard about this way of being religious. So the first thing that came to mind is Diane Moore's work and the notion of that religion must be understood in its context, place, and time, and therefore there to prevent, ideally, from people locking into one specific or extremist perception of religious practice. I'm very curious to hear what Muhammad has to say.
Yeah, I was thinking in that way. But, the most important thing is religious literacy is very low level among people. Even in the classroom, when the students come first, we ask them various questions, something very simple question about how they understand Christianity or other religions. That lack of knowledge actually is leading the whole world towards this, what is happening in our world today, how religion is exploited, how religion is used by politicians. So I think this game and hopefully other games which are created in this line will create a better education, because it is a fun. At the same time, it is education. Sometimes our younger generation don't want to read books. So this is, they will have the fun and they will have that education. And especially this, that type of education, how different communities can live together. Excuse me. Live together in peace. So I'm hopeful. This is the beginning. I think it's a very creative idea which Professor Owen has brought. And I think we will have more of such things we will create together. He's looking for more funding for other games like that. And finally, we shall have games also, which will have all three Abrahamic religions together. So how we can do that, how we can have a better education for our next generation to live in peace. So I think it will happen. Exploitation will decrease when our next generation is properly educated, how communities live together in past and how they can live together in the future.
Let me squeeze in an email from Andrew, who says, your guests have said that there is a great misunderstanding of Sharia law. Am I wrong to think that, at least in the modern sense, some Islamic nations use Sharia law to, for example, discriminate against women? The Taliban cites Sharia law. Owen and Muhammad, do you want to hit that?
This is very true that especially when we look to Afghanistan today under Taliban again, how there is abuse of the Sharia law. But there is a deeper problem if you look into the issues of Sharia law. When Sharia law was practiced in the court, there was an interpretation. There was, if you look into Sharia law, it was much more stronger and much more liberal than the Western law before. But after 18th century, when the downfall happened, and then 19th century and 20th century, this interpretation, which we call it ijtihad, actually, meaning to interpret and to be used in the court, and the judges and the attorneys look into different ways, that has not happened. So actually, the Sharia law does need the 21st century interpretation, how things are happening, the conditions of the people, the living of the people. So there is some loopholes today which we see. That's why Sharia is not applicable today. And those countries which are using some parts of it, some of them are using it very wrongly. So we hope that education, especially the way it is happening now in Muslim countries, the way interfaith is happening, the way women are demanding their rights according to Quran, because Quran specifies quite a bit of that, how men and women and each human being, whether they are believer or not believer, they are humans and they are equal, and no one shall be discriminated. They all have the same human rights. So those things, hopefully, with some change, with some new leadership which is emerging from the younger generation, things will change, hopefully, and there will be. So right now, you don't see really Sharia law applicable, even in the Muslim countries.
All right, 20 seconds. Final thoughts from you, Owen, as we close the program.
Well, I just think that thinking about learning about other people's religions in the context of history, in the context of place, the more that we can learn about one another, the better we'll be together, and hopefully bringing more hope to our communities and the communities around us.
Owen didn't ask me to say this, but if you look it up, there are a number of awards out there for creation of new games, different themes and categories, and these games have been on a number of different lists. I know some real honors already have come Owen and the team's way for the creation of the Lost and Found series, which you can find online. We'll throw a link if listeners want to find it. Owen Gottlieb, good luck to you, and thanks for telling the story of these games.
Thank you. Great to be here. And thank you to Mohammed.
Mohammed Shafiq, wonderful to talk to you as always, my friend. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for making me to be part of this discussion.
You got it. And from the whole team at Connections, it's Rob, Evan, Megan, Emery saying thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow.